We're joined on the line by Emil Davey, an activist with Disrupt Burrup Hub. Thanks so much for joining us, first of all, this morning, Emil.
No worries. Thank you for having me, yeah.
Now, a lot on your mind, I'm sure, and I've seen you quoted as saying it's a burden on your shoulders, and understandably so. And before we proceed with this interview, mindful, of course, there may be certain things you can't comment on legally speaking, but just briefly, you've been given a summons to appear in the Supreme Court by Woodside Energy. I saw an interesting description of the type of legal action this is in Disrupt Burrup Hub's media release. Actually, I'd not seen this term before. I had to look it up. A slap suit, meaning a strategic lawsuit against public participation, or strategic litigation against public participation, a legal term that's come out of the United States, as I understand it. But again, subject to, you know, maybe certain legal restrictions that may be upon you, and cautious of what you may or may not be able to say. Just briefly explain, you know, your understanding of the situation in terms of receiving that summons, and why Woodside is taking this legal action.
Yeah, totally. So essentially, what's happening is Woodside, as a multi-billion dollar company, are taking out civil action, civil lawsuits, a slap suit against three climate activists who have been peacefully protesting against Woodside and what they're doing. And this is fairly unprecedented in WA. Like, we've seen this, the last time was in 2005 in Tasmania, where companies are taking lawsuits against peaceful climate activists. And this is in relation to, you may or may not have seen it in the news, when Woodside HQ was successfully evacuated by Kristen Morrissey with a hoax gas leak. So this is kind of Woodside's response to that. And they're kind of keen to make an example out of climate activists by spending a lot of money on their legal team to pursue climate activists, kind of, and to intimidate and silence. It's an intimidation tactic, really.
And it is, while not unprecedented, in doing a bit of research for this interview, and it's mentioned, I think, in the DBHR press release, you'd need to go back nearly 20 years, as you say, to Gunns, the infamous Tasmanian timber company, taking similar action against 20 activists in the so-called Gunns 20 case. Adani is taking some legal action against a particular individual activist. But it seems, I'm certainly no legal expert from what I've read and understand, there's an attempt here by Woodside not only to go against, or to take action against, particular individuals, but against Disrupt Burrup Hub as a whole. And without wishing to speculate too much, it seems there may even be a legal strategy here to financially bankrupt Disrupt Burrup Hub, because I noticed that as part of this summons, they are making an order for discovery, or a request for the three activists named in this action to name other activists and basically, I suppose, take collective responsibility as a group for the action that took place.
Yeah, that is essentially what's happening. So yeah, the Woodside trying to obtain a court order that would force activists to hand over documents about who was involved. That's kind of the situation. And really, I think this kind of action makes Woodside look really bad. You know, as a multi-billion dollar company, it makes them look desperate to try and stop peaceful climate activists from doing what they do. I think it really reflects that the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign over the very short time of just 1 year has really undermined Woodside's social license, which they rely so heavily on to operate. And Woodside really see the campaign as a massive threat, something that they need to stop right away. And as we can see, they're spending a lot of money and a lot of time in trying to do that through civil legal proceedings.
Yeah, just talk a little bit more, Emil, about the success of the campaign, because you're absolutely right. And you know, we often say on the show here, we put our cards on the table. We don't advocate so-called bounce journalism. You can call us advocacy journalists, biased journalists. I don't particularly care. We're in the business of telling the truth here. And the truth is that Burrup Hub campaigners are doing great work, I think, in trying to stop the Burrup Hub projects. But we've seen the Frederick Cubbon action, the now, you know, pretty notorious action, depending on how you look at it, outside Woodside CEO Meg O'Neill's house. There's been plenty of street protests. It strikes me as a very, and I'm not just saying this to be polite, Emil, I mean this quite sincerely, as a very dynamic, successful campaign led by some very talented people. So I suppose my question is, what do you attribute the success of the campaign? Because Disrupt Burrup Pub really does stand out in Western Australia as, like I say, dynamic and, you know, thus far successful campaign group.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Disrupt Burrup Pub kind of came out of a bit of a dead period in climate activism in WA. And it's always so hard to make climate activism happen in a continent like Australia, just geographically speaking. Like, what we're trying to do is we're trying to put the Burrup Pub on the map. And yet the Burrup Pub is, you know, over 1,500 kilometres away from Perth. Like, it's not an easy task. But what the success of the campaign, I think, is really attributed to, you know, people being really committed to the cause, because really enough's enough. You know, the Burrup Pub is going to have massive consequences on the climate and on First Nations culture, First Nations rock art. And it's been in the pipeline for so long. And it, look, Disrupt Burrup Pub is really just a group of people who have come together and said, look, enough's enough. We're going to stand on a line and do something about it. And we've seen how taking direct action has worked in other campaigns around the world. And for me, I believe this is like really the only way to make stuff happen at the moment, because Woodside is state sanctioned, really. You know, it has support of the state government. Like, they're more than just friends. They're best mates, you know. So it's really up to... It's not going to be the government who's going to stop this from happening. It's going to be, you know, regular people like you and me. And, you know, I guess the viewpoint of us as campaigners is like, we live in Western Australia. The Burrup Pub is going to have consequences all over the world. Like, we're talking mass displacement of people. We're talking death, really, as a cause of climate change. And it's all the source of this is in Western Australia. And therefore, we have a moral obligation to kind of stand up and stop it.
Just to tease out a little more, one of the important points you just raised there, Emil, and we've discussed this with Disrupt Burrup Pub media spokesperson Jesse Noakes in the past, is that it's very clear that to the extent that the Environmental Protection Authority and the National Gas Regulatory Authority, to the extent that they're really legitimate independent bodies in the first place, I think is questionable. But it is clear, certainly in the case of Woodside's Burrup Pub projects, that they are in favour of those projects very transparently. I mean, it's sort of, I'm not even quite sure why they bother to pretend that there's a sort of a formal independent regulatory process when it's manifestly the case that there isn't. So, I mean, corruption's a strong word. I'm not going to directly accuse those regulatory authorities of corruption. I don't want to get in legal trouble myself, but let's say one could make the argument that there's an element of corruption to those processes. So I guess speak to the fact that, yeah, we can't rely on those, you know, regulatory agencies to stop these projects from going ahead. It gets back to the argument you're saying, that it requires, to use an old-fashioned term, people power to stop these projects from going ahead.
Yeah, totally, and it's massively stitched up with what Woodside has done. It's they've been working on it, you know, since Woodside existed, in terms of, you know, being political donors, buying social license by sponsoring the Dockers and the Wasso and whatever. They really spend a lot of time and money, you know, stitching things up. And Western Australia is such a small place, and yet Woodside is making so much. A small place population-wise, if you know what I mean, and yet Woodside is making so much money out of it that I think it's fairly easy for them to be able to do that. And kind of, they run the state. You know, you might think that the Roger Cooks of this world are calling the shots, but I would 100% say that it's Woodside and other fossil fuel companies.
Now, getting back to the, and you're quite right to use the word intimidation, the legal intimidation tactics being pursued by Woodside. This Supreme Court summons of three activists is not happening in isolation. There was, I mean, remarkably and disgracefully, frankly, a violence restraining order taken out against activists for that protest I mentioned previously outside Woodside Chief Executive Officer Meg O'Neill's house. And there was even, at one stage later, reneged an order that these activists couldn't even refer to Meg O'Neill via text message. It's just extraordinary. There's, you know, I heard of one. Well, sorry, I was just going to mention as well the counter-terror police raid on the home of a Disrupt Burrup Pub activist Joanna Partik, and I also heard one anecdotal report. I should caution that it was never confirmed to me that one activist was even pulled over at 2 o'clock in the morning and had a gun pulled on them by an undercover officer. There's, let's say, stories going around town beyond even what you read in the papers that are pretty frightening, actually, in terms of what the police action and Woodside is willing to do to try and, you know, put an end to this campaign. So, I mean, again, you've sort of already addressed it, Emil, in terms of it speaks to the success of the campaign. But what do you think it says more broadly about the dangers that we're facing as activists in terms of freedom of expression and assembly? We've seen in New South Wales some pretty draconian anti-protest laws. Like, there's a lot of things happening across the country, and probably Woodside's at the cutting edge in terms of. And in cahoots with the WA police, I might add, really at the cutting edge in terms of trying to curtail our right to protest.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Woodside are doing everything they can. Like, I've certainly been through the ringer. I've been subject to state security house raids twice now. I've also been subject to the violence restraining order that you're talking about, and I've had, you know, bail conditions placed on my head that meant that I couldn't really speak to my my close friends and fellow activists for over 3 months. And also, when you're talking about the gun being pulled on the activist, that was me. And to be honest,
there you go. Sorry to interrupt, Ben Emil, but that's, I mean, sort of, yeah. I'm not really in the business of saying what a scoop, but I mean, that's, I didn't realise that, Emil. And there you go. So you're confirming that, you know, on the air.
Yeah, I'm totally happy to confirm that on the air. It's certainly, you know, it's not easy to talk about. It certainly kind of messed me up a little bit, you know, having that happen. But yeah, I was pulled over and held at gunpoint. And this is crazy. Like, you know, it's not like I was threatening at all. I was driving my car on a public road. You know, there was obviously no weapons in my car, and the police just come out and they're, you know, pointing a gun at me. And this is like, this is, you know, you might think that we live in like Australia, safe, free country, but this is like what the police are doing to peaceful climate activists. It really shows what's at stake here and what the police and Woodside are willing to do to kind of silence and intimidate climate activists. And, you know, they're trying really hard, but like I said before, I think this is really going to backfire on them, that this makes me more and more determined to blockade brows and stop Woodside from doing what they want to do. And I think a lot of people are really kind of seeing the truth here, seeing that this horrible stuff is happening to climate activists, but this means that this is important, you know?
Mm. Good on you, Emil. And I often say that we have freedom of expression and assembly in this country right up until the point that it becomes politically effective, and then you actually discover the true repressive nature of the state. It's one of those things that you don't really, it's one thing to read that in a political textbook, it's quite another to actually experience that in your own life, that we don't have the freedoms in this country that we assume we do. Just finally, Emil, there is an action coming up next Tuesday morning, 20th of February, outside Woodside's headquarters in Mount Street. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why people should get along?
Yeah, totally. So Disrupt Burrup Hub is holding its first mass action. So this is a big publicly organised rally. It's happening on the 20th at 9 a.m. outside of Woodside's headquarters in Mount Street. And this is essentially an action to show widespread opposition to Woodside's new brows extension as part of the Burrup Hub. So we really need everyone to get on down there. Like, this is a non-arrestable action. It's the time that we want all of our supporters and all of you listening here on the air to come down to Woodside and show in numbers that we don't like what Woodside's doing and brows needs to stop. And so, of course, we're going to keep doing high-profile stunts and other stuff like that in the coming year, but we wanted to hold a mass action to really show this widespread opposition to brows and what Woodside's doing.